webcasting around the world from the desert metropolis of Phoenix, Arizona, this is The Dividing Line. The Apostle Peter commanded Christians to be ready to give a defense for the hope that is within us, yet to give that answer with gentleness and reverence. Our host is Dr. James White, director of Alpha and Omega Ministries and an elder at the Phoenix Reformed Baptist Church. This is a live program, and we invite your participation. If you'd like to talk with Dr. White, call now at 602-973-4602 or toll-free across the United States. It's 1-877-753-3341. And now, with today's topic, here is James White.
And good afternoon. Welcome to The Dividing Line on a Thursday afternoon here in sunny Phoenix, Arizona, where on Saturday we are going to have to break out our winter clothing. Because, Saturday will be the 12th of June. The predicted high is 92 degrees. What happened to global warming? I was here June 26th, 1990, when it was 30 degrees warmer than that. Yep, 30 degrees, 122 degrees in the shade, not 92. And that was 20 years ago. How could it be so much hotter? Well, I know. Weather is not climate. I'm just. Anyway, today on The Dividing Line, I have some things queued up for later on. I don't know how long this is going to take, but over the past couple of weeks, I'm not sure how many months, there have been a lot of critics of my actions in bringing to public attention the issues surrounding Islamic apologetics and integrity therein, and so on and so forth. And I forget when the call was. I should have looked it up. But we received a call a number of weeks ago from Hussein Wario, who himself is a former Muslim. From what I understand, converted when he was in about eighth grade or something like that, and is living here in the United States now. And we had a discussion about some things. As I recall, it had to do with using a restroom as a place for Muslim prayers. Well, since then, Mr. Wario has had a lot to say in regards to some of my statements. And so he's been kind enough to call in today. And let's make sure that we've got a good connection here. And let's talk with Hussein. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, good. Excellent. Well, thank you for calling in. I know you don't have a whole lot of time. You had indicated that you had a birthday party to go to in a little while. So I'll get right to some of the things you said here. After the June 6th dividing line, actually there was no June 6th dividing line, but on June 6th, I guess is what this was, you made the statement on the web that you can prove that I made at least 20% contradictions in my recent DL webcast. Does that make him less Christian?
Okay.
And I was sort of wondering, even my worst opponents grant me a little better than 80% accuracy. Could you explain what you were referring to there?
Well, first of all, like I said before, I'm not going to be here to talk about either of the Connor brothers because that is irrelevant. And as a Reformed Christian, I'm very concerned about how you run your ministry and how far you go with it. And I was going to, in fact, write a blog entry on that 20% I was talking about, but I haven't come to that. Right? The reason why I'm calling is just because there are a few concerns that I have. It's only probably like 1, 2, 3, 4 of them. And I've only been listening to Dividing Line for probably for less than 2 months. And I've already found like 4 things in here that already raise questions, you know, about... I can say about your integrity, or it could be just about how you do things, especially with people that you don't agree with. So maybe we can just go to that, because I just want...
So you're not going to answer any of the accusations you've made then?
Hey, this is 4 out of how many dividing lines you have done, or how many interviews you have given. This will be enough to equate to about 20% of of what you have done, you know. It's like less than 2 months.
Okay, so the entire list of things that I had here, you don't want to talk about them. You want to talk about your points. Is that the point?
When I made that statement, I was going to do a blog entry on you, and I have talked to other Christians, and they told me that there is no place for it. Other Reformed Christians have told me, this is not about, I'm not going after you, okay? I just don't like it the way you just go about talking about other Christians. You hardly know them, some of them. Like, you wrote something. You wrote something about me.
Who?
You did write about me. Remember how
Oh, yeah, of course.
You said that.
You've been raising a lot of questions, and I have had to point out that some of your arguing is not rational.
But, well, you put me in the same line as Ahmed did that, you know?
No, I didn't.
Come on, you did say that I remind you of Ahmed did that. That's really bad.
No, I never said that. Where did I say I remind you of Ahmed did that?
Oh, my. Your blog entry didn't do that?
No, it didn't. In fact, sir, this morning you said that I shouldn't have made parody videos about Ergin Kanner. I've never made a parody video. So sometimes I'm not even certain if you're completely aware of what you're looking at.
Oh, you know what? Some of the Arabic stuff you have done, now Muslims are after it.
If you can be after a Christian who's not a former Muslim, missing one phrase in quoting from memory, Surah Al-Fatiha, and think that that's relevant to everything else we said? Yeah, that's a good example of exactly what I'm talking about here. But wait a minute. Where have I ever made a parody video of Ergin Kanner? Can you tell me that?
Okay, you know what? All I can just say is this. The way you are making fun of is Arabic, the way you have this Arabic tutor, and that is like totally out of line. Like, how much have you pointed out about this brother? It's almost like you're not giving grace.
Okay, Hussein. We responded to his claims. We played them.
But who are you?
And many people commented on the fact that we were very fair and, in fact, inserted all sorts of other discussions about other things. In fact, I bent over backwards to say, well, you know, maybe you could possibly look at it this way. Still doesn't make it Arabic, but I bent over backwards. I cannot even begin to comprehend why it is that we have all this data that demonstrates that Ergin Kanner has lied about his past and lied about what he is. And if anyone points that out, somehow they're wrong, rather than the person who has stood behind a pulpit and connected this stuff to the presentation of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I don't understand that. I don't understand your way of thinking, Hussein. I really don't.
Well, I don't understand you as either, because here you are. I mean, the Christianity Today reporter called you on April 22nd. He called you up, and you discussed this on Dividing Line.
Uh-huh.
And you praised Kennedy, okay? John Kennedy.
Praised John Kennedy?
You did praise him. You said the guy is an excellent...
Oh, you mean he said he had done his... He had demonstrated that he had actually read some stuff. Yeah, I did say that he had read some stuff.
You said he has written like over 1,000 articles.
Well, that's not praising. That's just giving factual background.
Okay, that's fine. But once the article came out and it didn't meet your satisfaction, as a minister of the gospel, you kind of went ahead and started equating his journalism to I don't know what kind of journalism, you know?
You mean when I pointed out that it did not exactly deal with all the issues, somehow there's a contradiction there?
Well, there is. I can say that there can be a problem, because, like, here you are, you speculated that saying that Liberty University must be like the main advertiser of Christianity Today.
That's true.
Why maybe they didn't get to the bottom of the matter. Like,
that's a possibility.
Yeah, but I cannot expect that from a minister to say that.
Why would a minister be so naive as to not recognize that Christianity Today is a profit-driven organization?
Yeah. You are a minister of the gospel.
Yeah, I am, and that doesn't mean I'm naive.
No, but why would you even make that kind of a statement?
It's a factual statement. Follow the money, Hussein. Follow the money. It's just a factual statement.
Oh, my word.
Ministers do not become naive, sir.
No, but you are talking publicly about this organization, and you don't even know how much of Liberty University, how much Liberty advertises on Christianity Today, and you are talking as if You know, you have many.
So I raised the possibility that the reason that it didn't go into the depth of it, the way it did, was because something a lot of other people had noticed, and you somehow think that's wrong. Okay, fine. I will leave that to the audience to determine whether that's just simply being naive, or if it's something wrong, as you said. But your reasoning in your argumentation, for example, you have argued that you have debunked Turretin fan's hadith listing. I'd like to ask you, since you're a former Muslim, could you tell me, please, could you explain to me hadith 2982?
You know what? If it is mentioned in the body of the writing, whatever it is about, I can say hadith 28, whatever you say.
2982. Could you tell me what it says?
I cannot tell you offhand. I have to look for it, okay?
And how would you find it?
Hold on a second. I just have to look through my hadith books. Your hadith 957, it didn't take me that long to find it.
Hussein, you and I both know that there's no way you can find hadith 2982 because there's a piece of information missing. You and I both know that.
Yeah, but you, Dr. Y, you're not justified either for you to just say that there is just one way to quote the hadith. In fact, Muslims didn't even make that an issue. You're like,
Hussein,
you spend like a whole
Hussein,
radio program.
Hussein, you could not find hadith 2982, could you?
Anyway.
Could you?
No, I have to look in the books.
You still couldn't find it because it's not giving you enough information to know what I'm referring to. You
hey,
know that.
James White cannot find it if he doesn't have the hadith books. Okay.
I have the hadith book, sir, but you know and I know that there are different collections of hadith books. And therefore, you need to know what the collection is, don't you?
Hey, if it's mentioned in the body, I can find. You just, the whole time you're
bucking
about...
No, sir, you could not. Sir, there's
anyway.
More than one Hadith 2982 because
anyway.
There are different collections.
See what you're doing here.
See, you have not debunked the problem there.
Hey, I have debunked the problem.
Okay, then answer the question. Quote to me, Hadith 2982, Hussein. If you can't do it, then you are not answering my question honestly.
I am a former Muslim. I am supposed to be memorizing Bible verses, okay? You cannot be asking me on air.
I'm not asking you to quote it. I'm simply pointing out to you, Hussein,
anyway. You
could not find a reference.
Anyway, Dr. White, you know what?
See,
I mean,
there you go, folks. Folks, there you go. There is the illustration.
It is always James White.
One side has the facts and the
wrong.
Argument, and one side is just not going to answer the question.
Yeah, but you are never wrong, though. Muslims are telling you messed up a chapter from the Quran.
No, sir, I did not.
No, but you are a tutor.
Isam, in quoting from memory as a Christian,
would
as an illustration of how this flows through the Syrian culture, missed one phrase,
no.
And this is relevant?
I'm not making that an issue, though. What I'm making an issue is, and the Muslims have a problem with you, is that the way that chapter appears, you should have corrected your tutor, and you did not correct him, and you're not willing to take...
Okay, you know what? I will gladly let the listening audience compare what you just brought up with the fact that I have demonstrated that quoting Hadith 2982 or 957 is the same thing as saying Bible 316. It's gibberish. You know it, and I know it.
You know what, James?
And the people listening know that, Hussein.
Dr. White, I know this is all about you. That's why I have a problem.
It's all about me.
Dr. White is never wrong. Yeah. It's like you are after these brothers, and it is all about making a name for yourself.
That's what it's all about. That's why I somehow forced Ergun Canner to falsely claim to have debated Shabir Ali.
Oh my word! Look at this. I mean, you say to the Associated Press, that's why people are not taking you seriously. You just say to them, you know, they are the ones that are bragging about this, and you're the one who actually does it. I mean,
yeah, that's
what
true.
Does that say?
What does that say? It says that the next time that I debate Shabir Ali, I will be able to look him in the eye and say that I have sought to be consistent as a Christian in answering Islam and in exposing those who are dishonest in what they say about Islam and how they go about the ministry. And that's something that's absolutely necessary to do.
Yeah, but is debate the only way to really reach out to these people?
How does that flow from what I just said? Where did I just say the only way to reach out to these people is via debate? Where did I say that?
You are talking about integrity. You are talking about integrity in the way to debating Muslims and stuff, but for me, I just don't get it. I mean, I just see a lot of you into all this, and sometimes you even...
Well, sir, I'm sorry, but you're wrong about that. You don't know my heart. You don't know my heart.
You're simply wrong.
That's not the case. I would love to have avoided this entire mess, but there's something called integrity, sir. There's something called standing up for what's right. Thankfully, there are others who likewise have recognized that there's a real problem here.
But who are others out there, Muslim scholars, who are Christians, I mean Islamic scholars, that are speaking out against this besides James White and his followers?
Islamic scholars who are what? I don't have followers, first of all, sir, so I really don't appreciate that kind of language.
But the fact of the matter is,
most people don't even know about what's going on with Ergun Canner. The news is going to get out if the right things are not done and repentance and confession does not take place. But I think even that's too late now as far as the information getting out. The fact of the matter is that for you to accuse me of wanting to use this to get my name out there is just so amazingly absurd that it's, and I can just simply tell you, it's ridiculous.
It looks like that to you, but that's how it looks to me, okay?
I think for some reason you seem to be incredibly biased about this issue.
Hey,
Why is it? I mean, do you have any evidence that Ergun Canner lived in Turkey and was trained as a jihadist?
Hey, you have no idea what happens in a madrasa, okay?
I cannot say that
he lived in Turkey, okay?
You can't say that.
All papers show that he went to madrasa.
Okay, so let me ask you a simple question. How do you explain, Hussein, how it is that at the same time Ergun Canner is standing in front of audiences and television cameras claiming to have lived in Turkey until 1978 or 1979, that he's telling AP reporters and Turkish reporters that he moved to the United States in 1969. How do you explain that?
Hey, listen, that Turkish reporter guy, I have things translated for me by a Turkish lawyer, okay? I don't think that was a direct interview.
Okay, but anyway, about AP then?
Okay. What I can just say is this. I mean, Ergun Canner can answer his questions.
So you're not going to answer the question?
Why am I going to answer for him? The problem I have is you dismiss him. You say that he's a fake, ex-devout Muslim. And you don't have any evidence to prove that.
I have tons of evidence. You just ignore it.
You don't know this guy. You did not know this guy, okay?
Yeah, so if the only evidence you can have is that I had to know him back then, well, then no one has any evidence of anything, and we can't talk about history.
This is where we have a problem. I mean, he went to madrasa. I gave an example of a three-year-old. I have a link from my blog who was asked questions on TV about some aspects of Islam, okay? Mm-hmm. And even Prophet Muhammad said, you know, when a kid is seven years old, they have to be instructed. When they are 10, if they don't follow things, especially Salah and all that, they have to be, you know, spanked and stuff. He did talk about that, Prophet Muhammad. So the court documents clearly showed that they went to madrasa. I don't know for how long they went. If I go about and say they were never devout, I am lying because you don't even know what transpires in madrasa. Other than what your Muslim friends tell you, they have an ulterior motive. They can tell you whatever you probably want to hear or whatever will try to make their agenda, you know. I mean, so because of that, maybe you need to make some apologies to these brothers for some of the things you have said, which are not true.
Okay, well, Hussein, thank you very much. I think you've, even though we didn't get into the into all the questions and things I wanted to ask you, I think we've made the point pretty clearly.
Thank you so much.
Oh, but one other thing. I'm sorry. You did take a few shots at my church in your tweets. Could you explain on what basis? I mean, given that you say that I can't say anything about the Canner situation because I wasn't there. Have you ever been to my church?
No, I've never been to your church.
Oh, okay. All right. I just thought I'd...
I asked Josh about your church, and he told me a little bit about it. I mean, one of the guys on Twitter, he doesn't even... I don't know his last name, but he goes by Reza Kiss.
Yes, uh-huh.
And it seems like all the Reformed people out there, they go by pseudonyms, and some of them don't even reveal who they are. Anyway, the problem I have with you is because in my church, our pastor, he has a consistory, okay? I mean, the consistory of the church kind of keep an eye on what the pastor does and stuff. And the pastor has a lot of work to do. And it seems like you are a minister or a pastor, an elder.
I'm one of the elders, that's right.
You have a lot of time at hand to blog about other people. Had you been a member of my church, which is a Reformed church, mm-hmm. they probably would have told you to stop doing that.
So, Hussein, you know I'm doing two debates next weekend with Muslims. Do you think I'm going to be prepared for those?
I don't know. You're probably debating about the same issues you debate all the time. So,
When I debated Robert Price, which required hundreds of hours of preparation, did I show up unprepared?
I don't know. I'll find out.
Yeah, you don't know. That's
right. You're a very smart guy. Maybe you should just put your energy where you need to put it, okay?
Uh-huh.
You're not a
Thanks
Muslim
for your call, Hussein.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye.
You have fun at the birthday party there. There you go. All right. Okay, well, I had said earlier that I just felt like there was a massive cultural gap. I said that a couple weeks ago, and Hussein took umbrage at that too. But I think we just saw that, and I just leave that to everybody else. By the way, for those that are interested, Hussein, Hadith 2982, I was referring to the Hadith compilation of Jamiat Tirmidhi. And it's an important one, actually. 2982 is a text where Aisha provides evidence of a textual variant in the transmission of the Quran. But there is no way that he ever could have identified that if I simply said Hadith 2982. Because you see, there are multiple Hadith collections. You have to say Jamiat Tirmidhi, Sahih al-Bukhari, Sahih al-Muslim. There's a number of collections. And the point is that in their published works, Ergun and Emir Kaner have frequently simply put hadith and then a number. You can't find them, and Hussein knows it. And we all listened to him avoid admitting that the question I was asking him was not answerable, given the fact that I was not citing it correctly. And anyone who has to look up hadith sayings, which is what happens when you actually interact with Muslims with any regularity, would know that. And Hussein knows that. And the fact that he would not, you know, admit that is to me quite troubling. But there you go. Someone in channel just said, is Bukhari available online in English by chance? Yes, it is. Bukhari, Muslim, they're all available online in English. And you can track them down and feel free to do so. All right. let's go ahead and go to Alan in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Alan. How are you?
Well, how are you, Dr. Wei?
Doing good.
Good. Well, first of all, I'm kind of speechless after the exchange. I really want to commend you for your just your example of Christian maturity. I'm sitting there thinking, man, I was just hanging up on that guy. I can't believe it.
Well, I will be perfectly honest with you. The thought crossed my mind. I'm frustrated today. I'll admit that. I have read so much today from people that are just completely disconnected from what the real issues are that I am somewhat on the frustrated side. So I will apologize for that ahead of time. And I just shake my head sometimes. But anyways, that's not what your question was about. Maybe we can go on with something more beneficial.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you probably want to change the subject by now.
believe me, someone has it in their control to end this whole thing, but it doesn't look like he's going to be doing that. So we'll see.
Sure.
But anyway.
I just had a question about a Mormon apologist. I don't know if you know this individual or not. If not, then that's fine. But if you do, I just wonder if I could get your opinion on his ministry. Sean McCraney with Heart of the Matter, it's a TV show out of Utah. He was an ex-Mormon for 40 years. hopefully it's not okay, like I'm, that, that you, he's really a Mormon, but yeah.
Okay, you confuse me. He is currently a Mormon?
He used to be a Mormon for 40 years.
Oh, okay,
years,
so he's a Christian. I was confused. I thought you were talking about a current Mormon apologist.
Okay.
So my mind was...
He was a Mormon, and now he's a born-again believer, and he has a TV show contrasting biblical Christianity with Mormonism. And I was just wondering if you knew anything about his ministry. But
I haven't seen the program. I'd be interested in it. Unfortunately, I can't give you... He hasn't. Let's put it this way. I haven't spoken at any of the same conferences he was speaking at, and I haven't seen a book or something like that. But I'd be, if you have some information, if you could drop it by the website, I'd be interested if I could see some online stuff. That would be good. Other than that, I'm afraid I'm not going to help you out very much.
Okay, that's fine then. And I did have a second question then, if you have time.
Yeah, go ahead.
The second was totally unrelated to that, but I'm reformed in my understanding of salvation, but I've been curious, for somebody who believes that you can lose your salvation, I've struggled with wondering whether that person could truly be saved. Not that I'm trying to judge them, but just because I'm concerned about whether I should, I guess, be giving them the gospel, how I should be looking at that.
Well, let's remember, we've got to be very careful. You can easily make the argument that a person who does not see the God-centeredness, the Christ-centeredness of the gospel, the fact that God is glorifying himself, that Christ does not fail as a savior, we look at those and those are so beautiful and those are so obvious that it strikes us that how could someone not see that? But at the same time, we need to recognize that there are people who have been raised with unbiblical traditions, and all they've ever really considered on the subject are texts like Hebrews 6 or even Matthew 7 and James 2 and things like that. So few people in so few churches are pressed to be consistent in what they believe. I'm not sure if you've heard me use the chicken coop illustration before, but so many people take what they believe about God and they put it in one little spot, and then they take what they believe about Jesus and put it over here, and about salvation down here, and the Bible down here, and the church over there, and they never let those things get overly close to one another, so close that you'd begin to see inconsistencies.
Okay.
And so much of evangelicalism is actually designed in its sermonizing to not make people uncomfortable by pressing them toward consistency, that they can go through those churches and believe on the one hand that God's grace alone saves and believe on the other hand that Jesus can fail as a savior. And they no one has ever pushed them to see that those two things do not fit together. So we have to differentiate between the people who have just never even thought about it, and when they are forced to think about it, can be made very uncomfortable by it, and the people who, having thought about it, reject part of the biblical truth. That's where the major difference is. And so while you can look at a consistent Arminian position and say, man, you would eventually have to fundamentally deny sola fide or something along these lines to really, really be consistent here, we have to realize the vast majority of people have never been put in that position. And in fact, if my life is any indication, they don't like it at all when someone forces them to think about such things. And so that's where you have to be very, very careful. It's great to press toward that consistency, but you can't assume that people who haven't been pushed to do that are necessarily denying an element of the truth. They just may not even realize that they're confessing one element of truth that's contradictory to another element of the truth.
How about contrasting, I guess, if you will, the Joe Blow in the pew with those people who have studied it and have looked at it and seem to still refuse to, you know what I mean? It almost reminds me of John 6 when Jesus basically tells them flat out, no one can come to me unless the Father, draws them to me, or unless the Father grants it to them. And the reaction of the crowd is, they're like, whoa, this is too much for us.
Right. And they walk away. And they walk away. Right. Now, of course, they're in the presence of the very incarnate Son of God. It's a little bit different than the situation we're facing with some of these folks. But, yeah, first of all, it's really not up to us to make those decisions. But I would make a strong distinction between the person who is ignorant about a contradiction in their theology and someone who professes a contradiction in theology that results in a denial of important elements of biblical truth. So, you know, I strongly counsel people to avoid making the connections that put you in a position of judgment, but at the same time to press for biblical consistency and the whole counsel of God and all those things. And it's a, it's a balancing act. To remember that outside of the grace of God, we wouldn't have gotten through. You know, for some people, it's extremely troubling to finally see yourself as God sees you and to see God as the Word reveals Him. I mean, for us, that's a precious thing, but for a lot of folks, it's a real struggle. And
it was for me too.
Yeah,
I wasn't always reformed. So, yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah. But it was God's grace that brought you to that point in the first place. And and we have to be careful that we don't make that transition the same thing as our salvation, because I was truly a redeemed believer before I came to understand all of this. The hyper Calvinist is a person who says that unless you got all 5 points crossed off on your list, there's no way you can be redeemed. And that's where we really need to be really careful about the perfectionists out there at that point. So, alrighty?
Right. Yeah, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Alan. Thanks for your call today.
Okay.
All right, God
Take
bless.
Care.
Bye-bye. Bye. 877-753-3341. I guess we'll just go ahead and keep on trundling along here. Don't need to let poor Rich come on. By the way, we do have Skype available at dividing.line. Even though Rich is not here today, the man we identify as the rookie is getting more experience and so far has not made any rookie errors. You've a little bit like the, did you see that new pitcher that debuted a couple days ago? He's supposed to be just the hottest thing in the major leagues, and he had his debut pitching game just a couple days ago, struck out 14 batters. This kid's like 22 years old, and he struck out 14 batters, pitched 7 innings. So is that what you're trying to do today? We're going to try to get through this whole thing perfectly. I just jinxed you. In a moment, I'm going to start sounding like Max Headroom, and, a baseball game is going to appear on the feed because the rookie is going to anyway. all right, let's continue on then. Anyways, and let's talk with Ken up in Ken. When we used to go up to Utah on missions trips, when we crossed the Arizona-Utah border, we even stopped a couple times and took a picture of the Utah sign. But what we would always say is we were now entering into a foreign mission field every time we went to Utah. So just thought I'd
yes,
let
sir.
You know that.
Well, and I had to go to language school.
Yes, you do. It's a cultural language, though. It really is.
Absolutely. Well, and it's a joy to speak to you. And as a foreign missionary, it is a lifeline listening to the Dividing Line.
Well, good. Excellent. Do you know the fellow that the previous caller was just asking about?
I didn't catch the whole
call. Oh, okay. He was asking about a former Mormon that has a television program that comes out of Utah. I didn't know if you're up there. Maybe you were familiar with it.
If it's who I think it is, yes.
Oh, okay.
There are a couple of prominent characters.
Oh, okay. All righty. But that wasn't what your question was about, actually. So,
no, I'm dealing with a couple of issues that at their core is what I think is a moderate King James only perspective.
Okay.
And basically the way it was articulated was there's no such thing as an inspired lexicon. We want to let the Holy Spirit define his own terms. And that leads into basically a study of every occurrence of a word. Mm. And that's led to a couple of interpretations that kind of put me on the low ground, because you know they in typical King James fashion they've sort of assumed the high ground that they're speaking for the Holy Spirit. But how would you respond to the idea that there's no such thing as an inspired lexicon?
Well, that's true. There's no question about that. I mean, the current standard lexicon, Bauer, Donker, Arndt, and Gingrich, which used to be Bauer, Arndt, Gingrich, and Donker, and so on and so forth, I can demonstrate that even between the second and third editions of that particular lexicon, which is the standard scholarly lexicon, there have been changes that are politically motivated. So you do have to be aware of influences. And, of course, especially in Old Testament lexicography, every decade brings further light as archaeological discoveries allow us to learn more and more about cognate languages around Hebrew. For example, flora and fauna terms in the Old Testament have always been very, you know, what is the rock badger, you know, and stuff like that in the Old Testament. And really, 200, 300 years ago, there was stuff we were just guessing at that we now have a significantly better idea of because we have, Ugaritic texts are being translated and things like that, which are cognate languages, and they're terms and roots that we can have more light shed on and things like that. So there's all that kind of stuff, which I think is important. But I don't know what that has to do with then saying, well, we don't look at lexicons. We somehow just study the word in the Bible, because if you're studying the word in any translation, you're still dealing with somebody else's having looked up the word in a lexicon. What are they using Strong's exhaustive concordance? Are they only using the King James? What's going on?
Well, it's in this particular case, it's an inductive study, and they're pulling the word based on how it's used in a number of contexts, and then applying that, kind of ignoring
immediate context,
semantic domain.
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm really driving at is is there a way to articulate, to kind of expose what they're doing?
Yeah, I think there is.
As taking us away from the objective.
Yeah, I think there is. What you have to do with somebody is basically say, look, there is a form of study that in essence creates a Holy Spirit language, and it says, well, you know, since the term was used this way over here and it's used this way over here, then we can read this into this over here. The problem is that let's use a text. Let's use Hebrews chapter. We'll make this relevant to you living in Utah. How's that? We'll try to kill a couple birds with one stone here. There is a Greek term in Hebrews chapter 7. I believe it's verse 24, that says that Jesus holds his priesthood operabaton. Now, when the writer to the Hebrews wrote that particular word, he expected his audience to whom he was writing to understand the word because he was making an argument to them. He was making a specific argument about the nature of Christ's priesthood. Since he does not pass his priesthood on to someone else, he alone holds that priesthood. He is able to save forever those who draw nigh unto God by him, seeing he ever lives to make intercession for them. So this is relevant. Operabaton, I learned that term back in college because I was dealing with the Mormons and their whole priesthood concept. And the reality is that Jesus doesn't share the Melchizedek priesthood with every little 19-year-old guy riding along on a bicycle. He holds that priesthood without successor. He doesn't pass it on to somebody else. That's the whole point. He's the only high priest we need. We don't need the Mormon priesthood and its claims for the Melchizedek priesthood and things like that. But the point is that since the writer intended his audience to understand his argument, then he had to use terms that would have had a particular meaning in that particular context that they would have understood. And so if they didn't have, you know, someone's grabbing context from other books that they didn't even possess and reading that into the meaning, then the original author's intentions would be completely lost. It wouldn't make any sense. The people who originally got that letter, if they don't have some other letter that Paul wrote someplace else, if Paul wrote Hebrews, we're not assuming that, but if someone's
you're safe with me on that one.
Okay, if someone's grabbing a meaning from a letter that we can't even show that the original audience would have possessed, then that would just completely vitiate. It would eviscerate the argument that the man's making, and in essence, it would make that original context of writing those people utterly irrelevant. The only thing that becomes relevant is the final canon of Scripture and the final Bible, but in essence, it makes the writer's concerns about the Hebrew Christians, it makes the concerns that Paul has for the Corinthians or that John has in writing the Revelation, it makes all that a sham. All that was irrelevant because we really couldn't have understood that single book as a book. And that's the problem with that type of approach, is that you're not allowing those original contexts to stand.
Excellent.
So that's where I would go, is say, how does your approach answer and in fact, what you might want to do is use something like 1 Thessalonians, the earliest of Paul's epistles, if we take that as the first one, and say, find a term in there that he uses in later epistles and say, now, if you take what you found in a later epistle and read it back into this, how could the Thessalonians have understood what Paul was saying? It has to be definable within the context it was used. That's normal human language, and these documents were written to communicate something in normal human language. That's the whole point.
Well, and when you put it that way, that does seem to run against the flow of progressive revelation even.
Well, in what way? I want to make sure I understand what you're saying there.
I mean, their arguments.
Yeah, sure, it does. Yeah, because it's their arguments are envisioning a finished canon that allows you to go cherry-picking meanings and reading them from context into context that completely ignores the fact that this was not only progressive revelation, but that there was a time period over which these books were written and there was a context. You know,
right.
I've used the illustration of manuscript P72 when I talk about the reliability of the text in the New Testament. I project a page, which is the end of end of 1 Peter, the beginning of 2 Peter. I tell the story about how I saw it back in 1993 up in Denver and stuff like that, and give it a little background. But I point out that probably what you had here was someone who was, you know, went into a Christian congregation. Maybe they were traveling. Maybe he was a soldier, a business person, whatever. Went into a Christian congregation. Here's someone reading from this and says, I've never heard that before. What is that? Well, those are Peter's epistles. Could I copy that and take it back to my fellowship? Because we don't have that. So there was even a time period where, and this is reflected, for example, in the book of Revelation. It had to fight for canonicity. And we have far fewer manuscripts of Revelation because of the fight that it had to go through. There was a process that took time. And that whole viewpoint that they're presenting just wouldn't work for any Christians at that time period. They could not have done what those later groups, what we can do, later with a completed canon. And so it really makes you sort of go, yeah, well, those ancient folks, God really wasn't overly concerned about them anyways. He didn't really want them to know his truth. I'm like, no, that's not the case. It ignores how we got the scriptures in the first place. So yeah, but let's face it, how many people, most evangelicals don't have a proper understanding of how we got the New Testament. They don't see the process. They're not familiar with the time it took to bring it all together. And so, as long as they figure that it's always had thumb indexing, why not just read one meaning into another text and stuff like that? But that's not the way to do exegesis.
Right.
Well, alrighty.
Thank you very much. And if you're ever in the mood to cool off with some green Jell-O, give me a call.
Okay. Thanks, Ken.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Well, Utah is when was the last time I was in Utah? For that conference I did a little while ago. And I would like to get, one of the main reasons I'd like to get back to Utah is because that's the only place left that has any taco times. And even though it would not fit into my current diet at all, and I would probably get sick if I now ate what I used to eat regularly. I probably would not even survive eating at Taco Time, but the crisp meat burrito at Taco Time is still one of my favorite things in all of life. But I would probably look at it now and go, ha, how many saturated fats? How many grams of sodium? No way! But it was on our trips up to Utah that I fell in love with the crisp meat burrito at Taco Time. So I don't want anybody to go to Taco Time and get a crisp meat burrito just because I mentioned it, because I think there is over 1,000 milligrams of sodium and who knows what other things. Oh, no. Did he actually call in? He's probably responding to what I said on go ahead, bring him up. Here we have an Englishman. But he's an Englishman currently living in the penal colony that is known as Australia. And so, Brother David, how are you today, sir?
Hey, Seagull Bait, how are you?
Hey, Seagull Bait, that's... You know,
you should explain that to your listeners.
I still think they're saying mine because let me explain this because no one's gonna have any idea why. First of all, our brother David here is one of the number of Australians. He's living in Australia, so I'll call him an Australian, but he's an Englishman. Are you
shocking? Can I call you a Yankee then?
Yeah, if you have to, because we did win that war. But anyways, who made it possible for me to go down there winter for them, but summer our time. And in fact, if you've seen the picture of me at Macquarie University, it was David here who arranged that, so I must thank you for that. But it was also David.
Hey, I took that picture.
You took that picture. Shot. You are very famous. It was a very, very good picture. I use it in my presentations, and I appreciate that. But it was David that took me down to the to a fish and chips place. I guess a fairly famous fish and chips place.
Doyle's Fish and Chips, Watson's Bay, Sydney.
Okay, it's in Sydney, and he didn't warn me quite properly because it was just sort of a stand type thing. There wasn't any place to go in and sit down, so you had to sit down on the benches, which is very nice. You know, right next to the water, you know, and then there's boats and stuff like that. But what he didn't warn me about were the seagulls. Because, you know, I saw the seagulls, and, you know, they're making a noise and a racket, a big deal. So I sit down, and I open up my little box of fish and chips, and I reach in, and I get something. I don't know if it was fish or the chip. I'm not sure which one. But it's about 50% of the way to my mouth when I realize that my entire field of vision is now taken up with the business end of the bottom of a seagull, which has flown up into my face and is seeking to grab the food out of my hand before it gets to my mouth.
And the rest of them are hovering above like Stuka dive bombers.
They are. They're coming up behind me because there's a little wall thing. They're coming up behind me. I had to spend the entire time sitting there, looking around me before taking any bite and kicking at these things. And that's why I explained to an audience, I think it was in New York, and I may have, did I not do it here on the Dividing Line? I'm not sure, but I've explained that Finding Nemo is actually a historical documentary because the seagulls in Finding Nemo were based upon the real seagulls in Sydney who are the most aggressive, nasty little creatures you will ever encounter. And it was David right here, this man right now, who exposed me to that reality. So I appreciate that. But I don't think that's why you were calling in.
I'm aware that you and some of your listeners are in danger of a particularly pernicious synergism that I can see happening very, very rapidly.
Oh, uh-huh. What might that be?
Well, I'm sensing that a number of you have turned to the true religion that is about to be displayed on all your TV screens over the next month. That is the proper football World Cup. By football, I mean where you actually play the ball with your foot.
With your foot, yes, yes. Now you know when I was down there, I watched Aussie Rules football.
That's not proper football.
I watched rugby.
That's not proper football.
I watched football. And I watched the Ashes. Now, I'm sorry to have... Now, see, you being a transplant, you were sort of torn during the Ashes, were you not?
Not at all.
Not at all. You were completely for England all along.
In no way, shape, or form.
Okay,
no.
All right. You do realize that we have Aussie listeners who will be hunting you down now.
That's okay. They can come here if they want. That's fine.
It's Neutral Bay Anglican Church.
Yes, right. Give him the address. Listen, here's the
phone number. Anyway,
your listeners may or may not be aware, but on Sunday morning, Saturday evening, your time, there is a small interesting game
in the
World Cup.
There is.
You're aware, aren't you? Two countries are playing.
Yes, the United States and
England.
The United Kingdom.
England.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's England, not the United Kingdom.
I'm sorry.
England are playing the United States. And I'm just calling. I'm aware that, first of all, there's a pernicious synergism that some of you have fallen in love with the true game, and yet you're supporting the USA. So I'm calling to warn your readers, listeners about that. But secondly, I'm wondering if, do I get bragging rights on Monday morning?
If you would like to, if you'd like to call back, actually, it would be Tuesday. Actually, it would be closer to Wednesday for you as the next dividing line, because it's Tuesday here and you're 17 hours ahead of us. But
Squirrel's writing online. He's going, England's going down. The man has no clue.
Well,
no clue at all.
What
could
it's
you be ugly?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let me ask you a question though, David. The historian that you are, could you tell us what happened the last time the United States played England in the World Cup?
In the World Cup. Well, that was back in 1950. Now, if some of you are still reliving the Eisenhower years, and that's important to you, then you will know that the USA beat England back in 1950. Did I say it was back in 1950? How many years ago is that?
That's about 60 years ago.
Right. It's 60.
So when was
60
the last,
years ago.
So the last time the United States beat last time that England beat the United States in the World Cup was when? 60
so
years
we
ago?
Played once in the past 60 years.
Okay, let me ask.
Okay,
let me ask a more serious question then. How has the empire gone in the past 60 years?
Better than yours recently, mate.
The very use of the term empire anymore is a bit of a snicker, actually. But
I still use the term. I'm just not quite sure why others don't.
That's because
I'm a member of a Facebook group that title is called "I Always Wear Sunglasses Because the Sun Never Goes Down on the British Empire."
Okay, and so these delusions stick with you 24/7, or just what? I mean, really, come on now. You're living in a former penal colony. What are you talking about?
I'm calling to claim bragging rights. I'm calling to claim bragging rights to let you know I will be back.
Okay, if you want to be back, that's great. To be perfectly honest with you, David, I feel badly about this because I did want to be a little more excited about it. I enjoyed, believe it or not, as you know, I enjoyed washing the ashes, especially when the Australian team captain tried to eat a ball. Remember that?
Yeah, we did try to help him with it by firing it at high velocity towards his face.
Very high velocity right into his mouth. I even put the video of that on my blog, if I recall correctly. But I enjoyed that, not so much just because he got nailed, but I actually learned what cricket's about, what the scoring was.
That's right.
I enjoyed that, but I'm going to be perfectly honest with you.
And you realize, aren't you, cricket's more than a sport. It's an art form.
I agree. I actually enjoyed watching it, but I'm going to have to admit something. I could not name a single player on either team. And so I'm afraid that I can't really, really get into it outside of... To be honest with you, when I've thought about this, the only thought across my mind has been, do they have sufficient security? That's honestly been my concern. I mean it. Al-Qaeda has specifically said they wanted to target that game. And so, to be honest with you, I'm a little bit more concerned about that than anything else. I just hope it's a great game and everybody gets out alive, to be honest with you. And if you want to call up and if England wins... Now, what are the... I mean, I'm pretty certain they're favored, are they not?
Yeah. In that game?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Do we have any players who are regulars in the high level leagues that you guys have with Man United and stuff like that?
Yeah, quite a few.
Do we?
Quite a few. USA are no slouches. They're just they're going to look like couch potatoes when we play them.
Okay. All right. Well, you do realize now that you've done this that better be what happens because.
Here's the thing. Look.
Because I have your Skype. Look, I have your Skype address. I have your Skype address, and if they lose, I'm calling you.
I look forward to it. James, I'm going to let some of your slightly more serious callers call back.
Actually, I only have 3 minutes before we're done, so it's not a big deal. I think most people are interested in listening.
Something else with you then?
Well, I was actually, I think, let's do something serious. You had the opportunity a month before last to travel over to Perth, right?
Yes.
And you engaged in some debates over there. Why don't you just tell everybody what the debate topics were and how they could track them down?
Sure. I was invited by the City Bible Forum, a workplace evangelism organization in Perth in Western Australia, to come and lead their mission. I gave three public talks, two of which were talks, and one of which was a debate against a professor of psychology from the University of Western Australia. And we debated the topic, people should keep their religion to themselves. And I had a good time. It was only an hour long, so we were restricted in what we could do. But we had a great time, and I argued for how much positivity religion, and in particular Christianity, had had in Western culture. And the chap argued, I'm not quite sure what his argument was. He was just worried that if people insisted on religion, it would all go horribly wrong. But I think I kind of won, and if people are interested, the video is on my website, davidold.net, and I might just put that up again, sticky it up, if people are interested in that.
Yeah,
we had a good time.
Well, now, you know, living down there, you're living in a very, very secularized society. Is that how you would describe Australia?
Very different to the States, yes. Yeah. Very different to the States, and especially Western Australia, which is even more prosperous than Eastern Australia. And so there's a real core mentality under the surface of don't say anything that would disturb the peace.
Yeah,
And so that's how it works.
So we can sort of look over there and look over towards, sadly, England and Europe and see what's heading our direction, basically. And you're right in the middle of it. So,
Look.
What?
I wonder, because I think America is so much more of an actively religious country and so many more churchgoers, even. I think you guys are a long way from that. You're in a peculiar situation where you've got this high rate of church going, and yet at the same time, you're right. You're seeing some quite extraordinary things happen as well in your legislature.
Yeah. I think you guys just did a little bit more slowly than we did. But anyways, David, thank you very much for your Skype call. We'll see what happens next week.
and we're excited about Christopher Hitchens. Very excited about that.
Indeed. Thank you very much, sir. All right. God bless.
See you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All righty. Yeah, you have to drop the Skype call over there. There you go. I am being told by the powers that be that I also have to mention that we do have an official Facebook page now. It is not my Facebook page, which I don't really even do anything with myself, but it is the Alpha and Omega Ministries Facebook page. And you can go there and actually get discount coupons for special offers that we have and things like that. So look for the Alpha and Omega Ministries Facebook page. And now, hopefully, Rich will still like me for a while after having made sure, because he's done all the work on that. And we do appreciate that. Don't necessarily appreciate some of the people who show up to try to vent their spleens. But other than that, I guess is sort of how it goes. Well, thanks for listening to Dividing Line today. It was again, multifaceted one, to be sure. But Lord willing, we'll be back on Tuesday of next week. It'll be the only Dividing Line next week, because next Wednesday I head for Detroit and the debates. I'll be on the Paul Edwards program on Friday of next week there in the Detroit area. So we'll try to keep you up to date from Detroit. Debates on Sunday and Monday with Sheikh Muhammad Ahmed Awal. I'll be praying for those. Thanks for listening. God bless.
Dividing Line has been brought to you by Alpha and Omega Ministries. If you'd like to contact us, call us at 602-973-4602 or write us at P.O. Box 37106, Phoenix, Arizona 85069. You can also find us on the World Wide Web at aomin.org. That's aomin.org, where you'll find a complete listing of James White's books, tapes, debates, and tracks. Join us again next Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. for The Dividing Line.